The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This is the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network.
This podcast, both the Sunday Full Productions and our midweek bonus episodes, is made possible thanks to our patrons. Please join me in welcoming and thanking new patrons: Arlene Jacobs, Blessed Nikki 82, Brad Bone, John Martinez Jr., Big Boss, Matthew Dudley, You Inspire Me, Aw, Rad Izzy, David Smith, Paul Long, Vens, Tiana L.P. Senny, Isaac Ware, Chris Shim, Buster, Melissa Bender, Wasu Fishhead, Ginger Snap, Philip Higgs, James Ortiz, Michael Evans, Matthew Beal, Julie Holm, Silver Sauce 93, Katrina English, Jose Trinidad Corona, Marcel Bowman, Matt, PJ Trischel, Dana Olson, Jason Don Lingo, Casey Settlemeyer, Ava Kuchansky, and Shannon Reppin. Our patrons mean everything to us, and we do all we can to give back for their generosity. Starting for just $1 a month, all patrons get early commercial-free access to all episodes, along with their personalized shout-out. For $5 a month, you not only get at least 4 new patron-only episodes per week, but you also get immediate access to our entire back catalog of almost 500 bonus episodes. We also have levels that include coffee mugs, t-shirts, and logo hoodies. And finally, patrons created the option for people to pay an entire year at a time. To celebrate this, we're going to offer something special, but only for the month of September 2020. If you pay for a year of Patreon in advance, I'll give you 2 months of Patreon content for free. That's 12 months for the price of 10. As soon as the 31 Days of Horror starts, this offer ends. Again, this offer is only for people who want an annual membership. You'll still be able to do the monthly option at the standard rates. That said, come October 1st, our Patreon levels will increase to account for the amount of content that people are able to download immediately. Remember, we don't do series or seasons, so when you sign up, you get everything available at that Patreon level all at once on a personalized RSS feed you can put into apps like iTunes, CastBox, Pocket Cast, and more. And anyone signing up before October 1st will be locked into that rate for as long as you're a member. That's my thanks to you for your support of our show. If you'd like to see how you can support the podcast and get rewarded for doing so, either with free months of content or just to get locked into our low prices before October, please check out our reward tiers at patreon.com/creepypod. Now,
this is Creepy, a podcast dedicated to sharing the most famous, chilling, and disturbing creepypastas and urban legends in the world. Whether these stories truly happened or are simply fabrications is for you to decide. These stories may contain graphic depictions of violence and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Creepy presents An Unpaved Road, written by N.M. Brown. Sometimes there's no better feeling than getting off the road and stopping somewhere to take a piss. I've been driving for over 6 hours now. It's a refreshing sense of relief and normalcy. A break from the incessant parade of white lines blaring against black pavement. They must have repaved the road recently. It's smoother than silk. I pull off at a random exit and drive to the nearest gas station. Debris from human neglect tumbles across the dark parking lot. Cellophane from the top of a freshly opened pack of cigarettes blows over my foot and across the threshold of the building as I open the door.
Waves of stale beer and cappuccino powder invades my airways the moment it closes behind me. It's about as busy as you'd expect any place to be in the middle of a Wednesday night. I'm not sure what county I'm in now, but it doesn't matter. All these places are the same. I do my business, grab my beer, and walk up to the counter. The two customers that were there when I arrived are now at the front, shooting the shit with a creepy graveyard shift cashier. His face flushes as they lean over and press their tits against the glass, protecting the scratch tickets by the register. "Hey there," the redhead coos. "Can I get 2 packs of L&M menthol 100s, please?" The clerk straightens after she speaks, even going as far as to make sure his shirt collar and name tag are straight. Buckley. The guy's name is Buckley.
"Can I see your IDs, please?"
he asks. They look at him quizzically.
"I know it's dumb, but law mandates that I ask for everyone's IDs to look under the age of 40.
The taller girl shrugs her shoulders and reaches into her purse for identification, handing it to him along with the other girls. A smile peels across Buckley's face. He scans the IDs, a little longer than necessary in my opinion, before valiantly handing them back over along with the cigarettes. He begins to ask them where they're from, saying he hasn't seen them around before when I decide to intervene.
"Hey, Buck. Listen, kid, I know you're trying to get your dick wet here, but I got places I need to be."
I snarl through gritted teeth. All three of them look at me like it was the worst thing anyone has ever said in their entire lives. And with that, they walk out of poor Buckley's life, likely never to be seen by him again. Now it was my turn to smile. I just ruined whatever chance this loser thought he had at getting laid. My wrist shook slightly with relief as I placed 18-pack on the counter. He didn't show me the same customer service as the two women got. But that's okay. I'm having fun all the same. I go to hand him my ID before paying for the beer and he waves it off, saying it's not necessary.
"What? Not gonna try to memorize the address and my ID and make small talk?"
Buckley's not amused by this whatsoever. He looks from the 18-pack to the empty fountain cup in my hand suspiciously.
Yeah, all right.
I mumble and walk towards the door.
"Have a good one, bud."
Some people are just too damn uptight. Once I'm back on the interstate, I settle back into my own head, driving in a semi-state autopilot. I threw my phone out the window, going about 75 miles an hour, not too far from my house. It'll be nice not to worry about the barrage of calls and messages once the sun rises. After reaching the back seat and ripping open the box, I finally have my prize. Thank God for cold beer on hot nights. The click of the metal tab and that first sip give me the second wind I desperately need. I still have a long way to go before I can even think about stopping anywhere for the night. Well, day now, I guess you'd say. I need fortification. Alright, I'll be honest with you. I'm not exactly sure where I'm headed. I just need to get the hell away from where I've been. The last traces of darkness are just starting to bleed from the sky when I decide to get off the road for a while. My eyelids are getting heavier with each passing mile. The beer I'm holding slips from my hand, landing in my lap and soaking the front of my jeans as I hit a bump in the road.
"God damn it!"
I shout at the peace sign air freshener dangling from my rear view before looking down to assess the damage. The large and unexpected jolt makes me miss the exit I wanted to take. Looking in the rear view reveals nothing but a smear of red leading off into the guardrail. Must have been a damn pothole. All I can think to do is pull out at the next one and double back. I turn left after the exit, seeing as I have no idea where I want to go anyway. Nothing but a long stretch of deserted road is laid out before me. There are no gas stations, no coffee shops, not one fast food joint or stoplight in sight. It stands to reason that if I just keep driving, I'll come across another one. The same wretched songs have whined over the radio every half hour since I left yesterday evening, adding to my already irritated and mentally exhausted state. I clutch the volume knob in my fingers as I turn it down to a dull roar. I need to get the fuck off this road. The clock reads 20 minutes later than when I got off the interstate, and there's still nothing in sight. Just gnarled trees and a neglected highway. I find myself wondering what kind of trees they are when I come across a startling discovery. It's not multiple trees. It's the same one. The same damn tree over and over again. It has to be. To be sure, I make a 3-point turn on the side of the road and begin to drive the opposite way as before. Sure enough, after the same smudge line in the road, there's that damn tree. This can't be right. How can I be driving in circles if I'm traveling in a straight line? What's more concerning is the clock on the radio now reads 2 hours later than it was the last time I checked it. I'll admit in some ways it feels like I've been driving forever, but I know I haven't been on the road for 2.5 hours. If I could pull over and get out my phone, I could use GPS to see how far away from civilization I am. Christ. Nah, I guess I shouldn't complain. It just feels so damn eerie. The sky hasn't even gotten any lighter either. And the sun should definitely have risen by now. If I hadn't had those drinks, I'd be living a panic attack right now. As it is, I'm not too far off. My mind reaches the precipice of madness when I see in the distance I can finally see an off-road. It's not an interstate exit, but maybe it'll lead to someone who can tell me where one is. The road turns into a narrow dirt road after about 0.5 mile. I have no idea where this will lead to, but I'm pretty sure I've just wasted my own time. Good thing I have a sickening abundance of it. It narrows the longer I drive on it, making it nearly impossible to turn around. After a few more miles, I start to hear music and children's laughter from outside my window. Only it sounds closer, almost like it's coming from the car radio. But it's on the same shitty music channel and the volume's not even turned up. I quickly scan the floorboards in my passenger seat. I've only had 5 beers. It's not enough to make me experience hallucinations. Further down, the dirt path reveals a brightly lit area. There are cages with animals, tents, food, even amusement-style rides. The fuck is this? You'd think they'd have signs or a billboard or something advertising it. How are they supposed to get any business if no one knows they're here? Also, why would something like this even be open this early in the morning anyway? My heart drops to my gut when a parking attendant's white glove knocks loudly on my window. It's hard to look him in the eyes from the driver's seat. At first, all I see is a dirty clown suit, with button pom-poms larger than my fist. Some people are scared of snakes, others of insects. But there isn't anything on this earth more alarming to me than a clown. The fact that it's just a grown man like me in a suit and makeup makes it all the more frightening. The attendant leans down to reveal a row of broken brown teeth and slaps a green sticker on the silver hood of my car. Park right over there. No charge. Hang on. I interrupted, narrowly avoiding his eyes. I'm just looking for the next exit. I got turned around back there. I have no idea where I am. I'm sure this is nice and all, but I really should be getting back on the road. He leans further into the car in response. His breath smells like rotten meat and cotton candy.
I said,
park over there. He sneers at me before turning around and disappearing through a cloud of fellow attendants' cigarette smoke. The tone he uses borders on aggressive, threatening even. But even if the clown wasn't helpful, that doesn't mean someone inside wouldn't tell me what I needed to know. What's the alternative, though? To go back onto that black void of pavement for God knows how long? Swirls of dust assault my face the moment I open the car door. This wasn't like any carnival I'd ever seen. Instead of the funnel cake and popcorn smell that usually greeted you at the entrance, the air was replaced by an acrid smell, like boiled, rotted meat. Sounds of a warped calliope and accordion sang forebodingly in the stale breeze. Carnival workers wearing what looked like butcher's aprons jeered from behind their registers. A sign above a food cart closest to me read, "Fried hearts, livers, and tongues." Something about the way the employees looked made me feel like whatever parts they were frying definitely didn't belong to an animal. A dirty tent looms to the left of me, labeled "The Tainted." I make quick work of making my way through the flaps at the entrance, if nothing else to avoid the dust and head-pounding smells outside. The first platform inside reveals the silhouette of a young woman, but her frame looks bent and broken. There are jagged edges where smooth skin should be. Maybe she was wearing a special suit? All moisture evaporates from my mouth as I try to choose between disgust and fear. A placard over the area she's in reads, "The Invisible Girl." Invisible? I'm looking right at her. "You mean you can see her?" A man's voice asks from a nearby room. "Yes, of course," I reply confusedly. "How convenient. You only choose what you want to see, Paul. It's wonderful you see her now. But where were you when she needed you the most?" I shake it off and walk to the next area, my mind moving slow like a dream. This booth shows a silhouette that obviously belongs to a child. The sign above her entrance is eerily blank. Her body's smoother than the young woman's, but her skull is grotesquely misshapen. She starts to sway back and forth in rhythm and flail her arms in a silent tune, like she's trying to dance but doesn't quite remember how. A gentle tug on my arm brings my attention back to the hallway. Before me stands a girl of about 16. The mangled mess that should have been her body shows me that she definitely isn't wearing a suit. My heart races as she silently leads me to the back area of the tent. A placard above the first booth reads, "Robert Peter, the Child Eater." The man was enormous in stature, with hands bigger than catcher's mitts. He wore a disgusting bib, marred to the point of stiffness with red blood and glitter flakes. Various discarded children's items and strands of blonde hair surround the floor of his cage. He storms the cage the moment he sees me, which I recoil in disgust involuntarily.
"What?"
He smiles through bloody teeth.
"You think you're so much better? Everyone's here for a reason, bud."
He tries to lunge an arm at me through the bars, only to get caught at the wrist. Luckily for me, his arm isn't small enough to reach. I walk briskly to the next one, afraid that if I look back, I'd shit myself. Sally Razor Hands is a girl sitting alone in the corner of her cage with her hands jammed under her arms. streaks of red soak her clothes from where she holds him against herself. The sign above her door says she was born with ectrodactyly. Lobster hands. It says she tried to surgically fix herself and failed. She approaches the boundaries of her cage with impressive speed, disturbing the pool of blood that's formed at her feet. The woman reaches her arms towards me, revealing infected, mutated knobs of flesh. She clutches one of my hands with both arms, staring wildly into my eyes. There's no love, hope, or joy. Only madness staring back at me from behind the reflection of my own eyes. The instant her flesh came into contact with mine, it was flooded with sensation. I could experience another place. A shadow of a different world laid mere inches over top of reality. My mother's flowered wallpaper transposed the back of her cage. An acrid smell of burned food floods my airways as I hear my mother sobbing in the distance. The memory hits me instantly. It's the night I ran to her for help after the accident. Flashes of her begging me to turn myself in ran through my mind. Shaking my head to release my nightmare, I look back into Sally's eyes. However, they aren't hers anymore, but my mother's. Tears of blood are streaming down her weathered face as I hear invisible officers question her about my whereabouts. Horrified, I jerk away from her and usher the little girl away. Once we lose contact, our surroundings morph back to normal again. The last booth is mostly empty. A few bare hubcaps and a bent steering wheel lay inside. The sign above the door is blank, but smeared with gore and bloodied strands of blonde hair. Apprehension and dread in my heart weigh me down, like I'm walking through wet sand with lead shoes. What happened to the person who's normally in here? I asked the little girl. She holds a stiffened finger to her split lips in a shh and gestures for me to move forward. She continues to lead me back towards the front of the tent, returning to the figures of shadows. The figures in the booth next to hers was now still, standing towards the edge of the curtain around her booth while gazing out at us. My blood chills to see that the sign above her isn't blank anymore. Now it holds a name that I've seen in newspapers, on television, along with the description of my own vehicle, and I'd imagine on a death certificate. But it's a name that belongs to a face that I see every time I close my eyes at night. A name that makes me continue to throw back those cold beers. Hannah Martin. Hannah took her last breath under the weight of her Toyota Camry's front column nearly 6 months ago. She was 6 years old, just entering the first grade. I'd sideswiped her family's car trying to pass on a narrow road on my way home from work one night. My driver's side hit the back passenger side of their car. The little girl in the back's head whipped violently before the car flipped. She either wasn't wearing a seatbelt or failed. I was able to drive away from the scene and, well, they weren't. In more than one sense, unfortunately. Again, I know what you're thinking, but I barely had anything to drink that night. As I said, I was just getting off work. Hannah rips through the curtain and stumbles towards me, whistling the tune that was playing on my radio as I hit her car through a bloody gash in her neck. Each time she rises an octave, spurts of blood and cartilage fly from her throat, covering my face. She reaches her hand out,
to which the teenage girl graciously accepts. Laughter begins to resonate throughout the tent. The sound terrifies me, but seems to delight all the other occupants. The two girls before me both join sets of hands begin to skip in a circle as the laughter warps and slows to a sinister tempo. The lights flicker, and when they come back on again, I find myself in a seemingly empty tent. Only it's not. All the residents of the Oddities tent are now gathered at the front entrance and beginning to advance towards me. I turn on my heel and run as fast as I can manage. The tent becomes overwhelmingly hot the further I travel into it. I continue running forward until I reach the last booth. This one's sign is no longer empty. It now reads a name. Paul Edward Brown. My name. The exit leads to a smaller area than what I entered from, similar to an open field. Rotted creatures hang from hooks as prizes at the game booths. Horned beings shouted vile things at me using the voices of ones that I love. The end of the game area reveals a line of fetid corpses is formed, leading to something I can't see. I walk past the line, right to the front. It's a take a swing at a car line. An all too familiar vehicle sits in the middle of the lot. A silver sedan, green sticker on the hood. A peace sign air freshener. Only now there's fresh blood smeared across the dent in my bumper that I didn't notice before. No. I refuse to believe this. There's no reason whatsoever for a teenage kid to be wandering the interstate. What if I was a deer or a bear? No way I would have missed a girl on the road. Through the spider webbing of cracks, I see empty beer cans litter the floorboards of the passenger seat. My broken body lies slumped over the shattered dashboard. My decaying skin gives off a crimson sheen against the glittering bits of glass. I turn on my heels and push past the walking corpses. My hands stay raised by my face like makeshift horse blinders as I rush through the Oddities tent. The laughter from earlier was now at a deafening volume, tempting me to abandon my eyes in order to protect my ears. I don't, though. A handful of painted faces sneer at me with wild eyes as I search for my car, half expecting not to find it. I press the key into the ignition with shaking hands. The repetitive thought that this is mere miles away from being in my rearview permanently gives me the courage to peel back out of the now empty parking lot. I crank the AC as I pull away, not chancing a breath until I'm back on the small dirt road. The air is hot as it blasts in my face. The lower I turn the temperature, the more unbearably warm the inside of the car gets. I turn it off, disgusted and defeated as I roll down my front windows. A car approaches from a distance as I feel an all-consuming heat invade my airways. They're gonna have to go in reverse. I've gotta get the hell out of here. I flicker my brights and wave my hand out the window for them to back up. That place is already out of my rear view, but I won't relax until I stop hearing its music. Just a mile more, and I'll be clear. The other car ignores my signal completely, lurching in my direction as it picks up speed. Fuck. Looks like I'll be the one backing up. I shift the gear into reverse, but they hit me just the same. Feeling my own car flip is disorienting. It's also fast-paced, but slowed down at the same time. My head ricochets off the steering wheel on its descent to my windshield, stopping by my seatbelt. I regain consciousness in my car, thankfully right side up. I barely have time to check my surroundings or injuries before rotted bodies hurl hammers at the hood and side doors of my car. And it stayed like that. Every time I try to leave, a piece of me burns away each time I try to leave the parking lot, even on foot. If I attempt much more, I'll look just like the undead souls that bash my car. I've decided to stop fighting it. I didn't survive the drive. Neither did the teenage girl I hit. Hell's Carnival is my home now.
For more information, including pictures and videos of the stories told on this podcast, or to suggest stories for future episodes, please visit us at CreepyPod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, or email us at creepypod@gmail.com. All stories told on this podcast can be found at creepypastawikia.com and are protected by a Creative Commons license, some rights reserved unless otherwise stated.
The Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network. Home of Horror Queers, genre commentary from the LGBTQ perspective, SCP Archives, The Boo Crew. Listen free wherever you stream audio and at bloodydisgusting.com/podcasts.